highest rung of the evolutionary ladder, when we are dangling from the lowest. When the birds no longer flitters, that's when our evolutionary cycle will be complete.
What are friends for?
Sit drawn, deck down the star, down to another.
Go away! Go away! Leave me alone! Leave me alone! Leave me leave alone! I will. If I don't want to listen, I won't get annoyed. I will. If I don't want to listen, I won't.
Call me your friend.
Friend? You ditched that idea for a start.
Oh, friend.
Once, maybe. You ditched that idea for a start.
But after the way you just behaved.
Once, maybe. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Your behaviour was inexcusably ashamed of yourself. I saw you with that idiot, showering him with affection, shaking hands, liking something stuck on the end of your fingers, asking him what he's been up to, and doing your best to look interested in his answer. Then when he's buggered off, down on the end of your fingers, you tell me you don't even know his name.
It's
obvious once you had your best, you couldn't give a fig if he'd walked straight out onto a 20-ton lorry.
You tell me you don't even know his name.
Golden shred of your head was left. That you couldn't give a fig if he went straight out onto a 20-ton lorry.
Straight for a noose and hang yourself.
Raiding. Have you lost a golden shred of integrity left? If I ever saw myself behaving like that, I'd make straight for a noose and hang myself. Because I expect you to be sincere and never to utter a single word that you don't really mean.
Act 2, The Critic.
Dear, never to utter a single word that you don't really mean.
The Critic.
Are you talking to me?
No.
It's just that I was miles away. Yes. But
are you talking to me?
No. It's just that I was miles away. Yes. But
I'm crying out loud.
That's not what I said. Surely friendship must spring from a discerning and deliberate choice. What meaning would it have if we used it for every Bob, Slob and Alice who came through the door? We might at any moment discover one of these friends here. Total and utter friendship must spring from a discerning and deliberate choice.
Hey, no, don't turn me off!
I don't need a temptation.
Jingle!
Quite honestly,
around the last person. Quite honestly, I'm the last, but I appeared had more frank in these things than in wine.
Well, it's really must be on my part, but I
appeared had more frank in these things than in wine.
Well, it really must. There's the player, stick it on.
But we shall see.
Recording is quite a material.
Oh, indeed.
Now let's just listen to it. Where or how it was recorded is quite a material. Oh.
What?
Something's brewing. Something new. Something clarified. You'll see it even in the dark, because the audio affects the visual. This is Blind Man's Movies. This is experimental dance and pop music collaged together closely. It's after 1:30 in the morning. Who else is there? Who's out there? Who knows? This is Kill Radio. Welcome to the Chill Room.
We should also keep a tight grip on that idiotic desire for praise which makes us rush out and stick our self-indulgent pen-pushing under the nose of the unsuspecting. No, you misunderstand me. As I said to this bloke, one ill-conceived page of dross can destroy your reputation. You know how people are. They have 100 or more good qualities, they only notice your failings. You never said that. There's nothing wrong in making a noise to amuse yourself, but the only people who can be excused for letting their pompous puerile product loose on the world are those who have to do it for a living. Grip on that idiotic desire.
If you insist,
suppose you would stick your music in one of those time capsules that won't be open for at least 1,000 years. That way you'd prevent yourself and your progeny from becoming a laughing stock.
But as I said to this bloke, one ill-conceived page of dross can destroy your reputation.
No, I couldn't do any better. And that's exactly why I'd never force any other poor sod to listen to the results. Well, if it's praise you're after, piss off and look elsewhere. I don't give a monkey. I'll say what I please. Sod off, you tosser. People who can be excused for letting their conscience pour out the world. But those who have to do it. That's the word.
You insist.
That's why I never force any other poor sod to listen to the results. Well, if it's great, you know, then piss off and look elsewhere. I can't give a monkey's. Makes me feel when I see you being bored and slobbered over by some sniveling hanger-on. Relationships all sweetness and chandeliers. But whatever our ups and downs, I could have sworn you were made for each other. And now I realize I've only been kidding myself. Nope. We're heading for a break. Wait on the bed, I'm not slagging you off. It's just that you're over-affectionate with whoever happens by. How do you think it makes me feel when I see you being bored and slobbered over by some snivelling hanger-on?
Look, leave me alone. Stop interfering.
I'm suggesting you clout them on the head. Only stop encouraging their advances. I'm well aware you can't help being attractive, but surely you don't have to lead them on. As long as you keep flirting with them, they'll keep trying it on with you.
It's not as though they're the least bit interested in who you are or what you do. They just fancy a quickie. Take that Clitandre character from the other night. What did he say he was? A record producer. It's quite obvious he could have produced fart if you fed him a Vindaloo and a gallon of virgin cola.
I ask you, why should I believe you treat me any different from that bunch of hangers-on?
What assurance do I have that you don't say exactly the same things to them?
Yes, sod the whole world. My love is beyond all imagining. No man has ever loved as I do. Let's stop arguing. It's up to you now.
From now on, I warn you,
we must be entirely open with one another.
I can't
fly?
Look, Mrs., leave me to look after my own affairs and stop interfering. I don't need you to fight my battles. As it happens, you're the last person I'd fall in love with.
Just watch the air bubbles. Air bubbles stop. Another round, 5 more seconds.
Everyone else slagged you off. Now they've gone, it's my turn. That's enough self-restraint for one lifetime. I'd have you know. It's all very well reproaching yourself now that you've been found out and exposed as a spiteful, backstabbing, mean-hearted monster, but what about me? Can I overcome my infatuation with you? Can I find it in my heart to hate you? When it comes to the crunch, all of us are weak, stupid, and full of human frailty. I'll tell you what. I'm willing to forgive you. I'll do my best to excuse your vicious spite's youthful exuberance warped by watching Australian soap operas. I'll cast your recent misdeeds out of my mind, provided you agree to come with me. Away from all this. At last, I found the perfect way. I've sunk the last of my fortune into an ex-US Air Force B-52. What's more, I've contracted them to keep us refueled and restocked so we never again have to touch terra firma. Think of it. Just us two on autopilot, flying above this vile civilization till the end of our days. What does the rest of the world matter? I'll be more than enough for you. That does it. I abhor you. This refusal makes your past deeds pale into insignificance. Since you can't bring yourself to make me your all in all as you are mine, I renounce you. Your spell on me is broken. I'm freed from this diabolical obsession. Clear off out of it! Oh, I see you two have become an item. Chalk and cheese, eh? Good luck to you both, for all it's worth. I'm going to escape this cesspool of triumphal capitalism. I haven't bought a B-52. I was just testing her. I'm off to search the world for a spot so remote that David Attenborough hasn't filmed there yet. At last, I'll be free to experiment.
Act 1. As if we build
on cue, Act 1.
As if we see,
as if on cue,
we see a line past us before we noticed.
But we see that
street corner scene.
Act 2.
A man in white shoes.
And a man with a low umbrella. A postman with a bag.
A girl with her hair tied in a bun,
faded jeans,
sweatshirt,
and
a big bag.
Two women in red and black coats with one umbrella and bags.
A woman with a red cap,
and then nothing.
As if on cue,
it is a red brick wall,
as if it were a scene.
Act 1. As if on cue,
we see that street
corner scene, and there's nothing but the shadow of a taxi.
Shadow.
A bicycle.
And a police car.
Black man in white wool hat.
Bald white man in a business suit.
As if on cue, we see the red wall.
Act 3.
All right. In Lucerne, 2 decades ago, an unfortunate mishap occurred to an oculist. He fell, simultaneously with a pane of glass. In the crash that followed, a minuscule shard of glass was embedded in his right eyeball. Now, the eye is the most sensitive organ in the human body, so imagine the pain he must have felt, poor guy. No operation would have been able to remove the offending splinter without rendering the man blind. But once he recovered from the initial shock, what a discovery. He not only could see colors beyond the spectrum of human sight, but he became vividly aware of synchronous, non-local correlations of previously unrelated photons on opposite ends of the universe. The world, the universe, the multiplex multiverse of infinite probabilities opened itself like a billion-petaled lotus before his wounded sight in a hyper-conscious display of all infinity, of all realities, from beginningless time to endless infinity and back again, in a revolving sphere of impermanence and an endless cycle of death and rebirth in perpetuity. The story concludes that after a few months of this transcendent vision, another accident befell this poor guy. He fell down again. This time, the splinter got knocked out of his eye! And he immediately went insane when his normal human vision was restored to him. Of course, I heard this from some guy I knew. He said he heard it from the oculist himself.
Now I see. This is like that old TV show I saw once.
When we awaken at a certain point in our sleep rhythms, we have memories of what was passing through our consciousness, images, details, whatever, as we freely associate with what most likely was a series or a jumble of related impressions, we construct, usually non-rationally, a story, situation, or narrative which stays with us longer than the actual impressions themselves. In other words, we interpret, and we call that a dream.
Crossing my mind right now as I got my cousin Bill's Thunderbird about a quarter of a mile from here completely upside down in water and marsh mud. And in the trunk there are $5,000 worth of hot fireworks that I was running back to the city as a favor for Big George. And like, I'm really wrecked at the moment. And there's no phone here, and I think I better go lie down.
Everything that happens, happens for a reason, doesn't it? According to Life magazine, on March 26th, 1948... green rain fell on Dayton, Ohio. It stained the streets for several days afterwards. It was a media event at the time. A black rain fell over a 400-square-mile area of Ireland on May 14, 1849. This was reported in the Annals of Scientific Discovery in 1850 and in the Annual Register in 1849. The rain was the color of ink. It had a fetid odor and a disagreeable taste. According to the Annales de Chimie in 1885, thick, viscous red matter fell out of the sky onto Ulm in 1812. According to the Yearbook of Facts in 1861 at Siena, Spain, on December 28, 1860, at 7 a.m., red rain began to fall from the sky. It fell for 2 hours. There was a second shower 2 hours later at 11 a.m. 3 days later, there was another shower, and again the day after that. The red rain was examined and claimed to be made up of thousands of organic corpuscles. In 1863 in Virginia, tobacco growers reported mass quantities of blood and flesh had fallen over growing tobacco fields. However, 2 days later, here's good news. It emerged that this was merely a hoax perpetrated by Negroes. In 1859, according to the Monthly Weather Review in the UK, near Mountain Ash, Pennsylvania, thousands of living fish poured from the sky. They were minnow and stickleback. The London Times, 10 March 1859, the roofs of houses were covered with them. Report of the British Association, 1859, the evidence of the fall of fish on this occasion was very conclusive. In Nature, September 19th, 1918 issue, on August 24th of that year, hundreds of small sand eels had dropped out of the sky at Hindon, a suburb of Sunderland in the UK. They fell in an area of 60 by 30 yards as though dropped from a single point in the sky. The fish were dead and stiff. There was a shower of frogs the size of nickels in Arkansas on 2nd January 1973. A downpour of frogs or toads in a heavy rainstorm, according to the Worcester Telegram and Gazette, on January 6, 1959. Nellie Straw of the Sheffield in the UK, in October 1995, called the BBC program Schofield's Quest to state that she had been driving on the A82 into Glencoe in a terrible storm when hundreds of frogs began to fall from the sky. There was a shower of rats in Norway in the 1950s. Thousands of foot-long snakes fell out of the sky in Memphis in January 1967. You are comfortable, aren't you? It's odd to see someone out here that you don't know, mister. Don't get many strangers dropping in out here. It's odd to see someone you don't know, someone new. I'm your host. You can call me Charlie. Where was I? I have so many things here that have fallen out of the sky that if I told you all of them, it wouldn't make any difference anymore. Have you ever pondered the etymology of the word explain? Ex, as in out of. Plain, as in flat, smooth, clear, plain. An explanation, then, makes everything smooth.
In the first scene, we are in the house in the swamp. Tom arrives and pounds on the front door calling for help, but no one answers. Inside, he examines himself in a mirror and collapses on the couch. Valerie finds him. She says, "Look what the storm drove in." Tom is obviously worried about what's happened to him. He is in shock somewhat. He's overturned his car in the storm, and he finds himself entranced by Valerie. There is more knocking outside. Someone else has arrived. And as Valerie starts to go to the door, Charlie enters. Valerie introduces him as her father and continues out to see who's at the door. Charlie sits in his chair and looks over Tom. Tom explains what has happened and asks if he could call a garage to get his car fixed if possible. Charlie tells him there's no phone. And Valerie re-enters with Linda, whose car had also overturned and had run into Tom's car. Linda is quite young.
We'll be right back. within you and without you.
Cool scene.
Off go. Out here, they see something, no.
Remember itself again.
They see the sin in it, that's why.
Go ahead or keep denying it.
I was trying to find some way to.
Off out here, they see something, no.
Remember itself again.
They see the sin in it, that's why.
Go ahead or keep denying it.
I was trying to find some way to.
Off out here, they see something, no.
Remember itself again.
They see the sin in it, that's why.
Go ahead or keep denying it.
I was trying to find some way to.
Off out here, they see something, no.
Remember itself again.
They see the sin in it, that's why.
Go ahead or keep denying it.
I was trying to find some way to.
Off out here, they see something, no.
Remember itself again.
They see the sin in it, that's why.
Go ahead or keep denying it.
I was trying to find some way to.